Are entrepreneurs born or made?
They're never born because it is a skill that has to be learned the hard way, predominantly because to be a good entrepreneur, you need to have inversely correlated skills in you.
You're a strengths finder for yourself. You're a strengths finder in people. That's how you motivate a lot of people. Many of us are weakness finders.
Right.
And we are not as focused on multiplying somebody's strength. All these young kids, they complain about 70-hour weeks. Doing it in 3.5 days. You're doing it in half the week. That's what they need to learn. That's what it takes. There are no shortcuts. Welcome to Unstarted. What is unique about this show is this is about you. It is for founders, by founders. I am super excited to invite Ashish today on Unstarted. Lots of shared context and history. He used to work with us, with me. Under me. And he is one of those that fired his boss. Basically, he left. Welcome, Ashish. We have a high bar. Our Matrix Moments episode is supposedly the most listened to. And you gave a lot of very good insights there. So really excited to have you on this one. We are going to mix it up here and take questions that have come in from the audience. CEO of Off Business, founder and CEO, husband-wife team, Ruchi runs Oxyzo. So we'll get into all of this as well. On paper, IIT Kharagpur, ISB, I know you're Uriya. Lot of people, and you in particular, are larger than life. For founders who are starting out, they will know you in that strata of founders that they get inspired by, but probably not think of themselves as being able to get there. And I know you are very human, even though we joke sometimes that you're not human because of how hard you work.
This nickname, Mahasapien.
Mahasapien, exactly, which is from Homo sapien, which is for humans. So we used to call him I think ITC, McKinsey, everywhere.
McKinsey name.
Really. Yeah. So let's go all the way back. Yeah. Where are you born and raised? And very quickly, what's the journey been before we come to Off Business and the questions? And I'm told that you were discussing about your vulnerability. So maybe some of those along the way. Yeah.
So looking forward to this podcast, doing one after almost a year. I think one of the big reasons I like doing podcasts with you is because of the introduction. I'm really feeling good right now, so thanks for that. Born and brought up in Cuttack, Odisha. Spent a little bit of time in Bengal because my dad and mom were doing their PhDs in Kharagpur. So spent close to 7 years in Kharagpur while growing up. Then finished my schooling in Cuttack. Dabbled with a few businesses here and there, though I had nothing to do with that. I did it purely for pocket money because my parents were of the simple opinion that the lesser pocket money that is given to a guy, the more he'll be focused on studies. Did that. I think went to Kharagpur straight out of Cuttack. Was a mechanical engineer. Was a very social guy at campus. If you want, I will tell you what that means. But people used to know me.
Please tell us what that means. Weren't you also a debater?
I still debate. Can't win ones with you, but coming from that side of the world, thinking philosophically comes naturally to you.
Yeah.
Right?
And that was my worry because bongs are very philosophical. And then you said, don't insult me. So we won't go there.
So went to Kharagpur. Kharagpur, I think, was a big eye-opener for me in some ways. Cuttack is a very small town. I think it still lives 3 decades behind what Indian metros are today.
Yeah. There
my mind opened up. Met a lot of guys who were from very different backgrounds. And I was a very social guy. I wanted to be with people, learned from them. Thankfully, didn't have to study a lot to be good in studies. I would say Kharagpur pretty much built what I am today, which is to do little and make as much output out of it. Over a period of time, I started working hard. But I think Kharagpur is one of my best times where I really enjoyed what I was doing. Went to ITC straight out of campus.
Are you still in touch? So one of the themes that we have seen come across in this podcast is all the entrepreneurs seem to have somehow compounded every experience of their life into where they are today.
Yes.
Is Kharagpur part of your life?
So to be very honest with you, the way it has happened for me, Avi, and I would love everybody to do that because it does add value to your life, which is at every stage in life, you will always have a large network, but you can easily cherry pick the ones who are going to go up in life and at the same time be relevant to you.
Yeah.
Right. That's probably 10% of the network that you will have at every stage in life. The good guys actually make sure that they are in touch with them. So I would say that 10% is still in touch.
And I know, and I know you have done a very good job of it. But how do you do it? Because, and those 10% typically end up being the busiest people.
Yes.
And therefore, they also become very selective about who they stay in touch with. And I know this is your superpower. How do you do it?
I will tell you that it is not that difficult, simply because they also realize the same thing. If they don't realize it, at some point in time, they will do. And hence, they are also looking for the same thing. See, people want to be around great people. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Right?
People want to be around great people.
Right. So people want to be around great people. And that's the only way you can go.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the AI and stuff, with people getting abolished day in, day out, I think that's under challenge right now. But but that's something I picked up at Khadakpur. It was very easy for me to kind of look at a guy and say that, hey, this is a guy who will life mein kuch karega. Right?
Yeah. So, and you're in touch with them.
Yes, very much. Very much.
So let's fast forward.
Went to McKinsey. Went to ITC straight out of campus. Was largely in manufacturing. Mostly on the shop floor. Was a good shop floor guy because I loved machines. I was a true blue mechanical engineer at heart. Picked up a very different kind of set of people there. Again, very much in touch with them. ITC, in fact, was my favorite hunting ground to actually build our initial team at Off Business and Oxyso when we started up.
And the culture, a lot of things I have heard you talk about ITC a lot, even potentially sometimes more than McKinsey.
ITC, pretty much. I think one big value that I learned there, and it's very easy to forget, is that if you are a good servant, you'll be a good master. So spend a bulk of your time serving.
Very good.
Without asking questions, right? So ITC taught us how, if you're thrown at the deep end of the pool and you don't ask questions, you will grow by yourself. So 3 years at ITC, again, in touch with maybe 20% more than what Khadakpur was. Then went, did my MBA from ISB Hyderabad. It's a year's course, so has no institutional memory. So mostly in touch with my batch, but in touch with maybe 30% of that batch.
Yeah.
Right. Then went to McKinsey, in touch with probably half of which my network was at McKinsey. Fir McKinsey ke baad, I went to Matrix, in touch with everyone at Matrix. Let me put it this way. So one good thing about my, I would say my academic as well as professional journey is this ability to actually know that ki life mein kuch karega aur unke saath jude raho to tumhara bhi kuch ho jayega. That's how
very good kind of. Very good. When I know we had discussions when all of this tech stuff was happening, did you see yourself as an entrepreneur? Are entrepreneurs born or made, and how does it apply for you?
They're never born, because it is a skill that has to be learned the hard way, predominantly because to be a good entrepreneur you need to have inversely correlated skills in you. You can be born with one skill. You'll never have the reverse skill. Because God will instill one thing into you. Like I'm a good, very good sales guy.
Yeah.
Right? But as an entrepreneur, you need to be extremely detail-oriented. Otherwise, you know, the ground behind you will just slip away and you will never know.
Yeah.
Right? So I think because there are lots of inversely correlated skills. Like, for example, in my opinion, in the world that I started up, it actually at least needs four skills. You need to be a good sales guy.
Yeah.
You need to be very good with people.
Yeah.
But third is you need to be very commercial. And fourth is you should have the ability to kind of milk a stone for milk. Right? Which means work really, really hard. Yeah. I think all four, if you have the flair, you can't really work hard. You will try to manage with flair. So in my opinion, they are always created.
Very interesting. We had a question actually on sales. Can we bring that up? Learning sales skills.
Hi. So as a founder, I feel I'm good at product and tech. But when it comes to sales, I feel very intimidated. How do I overcome this?
So you were just talking about these skill sets that you believe almost everything can be learned. Specifically, sales. Actually, I also want to learn about this hard work thing, because you mentioned that you didn't used to work hard. I believe you have a lot of flair, but you still work very hard. So let's tackle first. And how you have applied it at the off-business company building in terms of teaching people, and you have a philosophy. So let's cover all of that, starting with this question on if you are a product guy, can you really learn sales, and how do you go about it?
So there is this concept that I learned in MBA, which was you should know whether to build or to buy. Okay, whenever, at least in my life, whenever I have seen a skill, I have tried to take this decision very quickly, which is whether I should be outsourcing that skill or building that within myself.
Yeah.
Okay. That requires a certain orientation, but the specific skill that you need for this decision to be made is to have extremely high levels of intellectual honesty.
Yeah.
Because you can fool yourself into yeah. believing that you can learn everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am very, very clear that out of maybe the 10 skills that are required to be an entrepreneur, four of which we just highlighted, I probably have two, maybe three. And I'm very clear that the other six or seven needs to be completely outsourced. And you need to find the right guy who stands for those kind of skills and is getting better in those.
Yeah.
So I'm a big
So I have a lot to unpack there. Actually, let's go all the way back. Huh. IIT people are extremely competitive.
Yeah.
McKinsey people are extremely competitive.
Hyper competitive.
I don't know as much of the ISB context, but coming IITC from hyper competitive cultures, most teaches people actually to be very insecure and want to project that they are good with everything. It teaches intellectual dishonesty.
Yes.
How did you get comfortable and with your own skin to, when did you, was there a trigger to be so comfortable?
Because I failed. Because I tried developing skills,
yeah.
which I wasn't good at.
Yeah. And for example?
I will tell you my initial days at engineering.
Yeah.
You know, I was in my second year. I was a mechanical engineer. Yeah. I was good with kinetics, stuff that was being taught, thermodynamics and all that. But the new wave then, I'm talking, this is 99-2000. So that was the time of the tech boom, which had just come in. And people were learning C++, Java, making models out of it. Internet had just hit the campus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I wanted to go there. I thought I will be able to do that. I just couldn't pull it off.
Yeah.
Right? Because my world orientation, my entire orientation was very, so I failed at that.
Yeah.
I again failed. The moment I completed my campus and stepped into ITC, I was very good with maintenance of machines, but when it came to, you know, designing schedules of preventive maintenance, I was a very good reactive guy.
Yeah.
But to actually plan out something for a year, strategically make sure that, you know, things will always be in line, I was not that great at it.
Yeah.
I was a very good executor, not a great planner.
Very good. You know, one of the things that has come across in many podcasts that we have done is there is a theme running through their through a person's life, which, by the way, I am realizing only when I'm doing these things. And I remember when you used to give me feedback on how I give feedback, you used to come and you gave me a book, Strengths Finder.
Yeah, Strengths Finder 2.0.
Strengths Finder 2.0, which, by the way, we then incorporated into our review cycle, right? So basically, you have been consistently one of those, and I know it's your management style, which is a great management style. You're a strengths finder. You're a strengths finder for yourself. You're a strengths finder in people. That's how you motivate a lot of people. That's how you surround yourself with people. And I think it's a big lesson for people, because many of us are weakness finders.
Right.
And we are not as focused on multiplying somebody's strength.
Right.
But let's go back to the question. I don't know sales. How do I learn sales? Should I even bother? Or in your framework, focus on what you are very good at and surround yourself with people of the complementary skill set?
Is that the answer? So let's just dissect that problem, right?
Yeah.
So sticking to sales, right?
Yeah.
If you're great at product, let's say, and sales is required to take that product to the market.
Yeah.
The first question that you need to decide is, do you have the inherent bandwidth to develop sales? Because everything requires effort.
Yeah.
If you don't have bandwidth and you're getting consummated in product, anyways, you have to outsource. Let's say you have the bandwidth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you have the bandwidth, you have the chance to build sales.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to build sales and you have the bandwidth, there are, in my opinion, there are three things to be done.
Yeah.
And you can very quickly know whether you can do it or not.
Mm.
The first is, are you a guy who actually connects at a very basic level with human beings in general? Because that's sales, right? Sales is about an interaction that you have to win. A very simple interaction. If you're doing it with your wife, if you're doing it with your kids, if you're doing it with your parents, if you're doing it with your boss, you likely have something to start
with. Very good.
Right? If you are okay with that, then there is a second. The second is, can you dovetail that personal intrinsic effort of actually connecting with people? Can you take that and apply it to a context that is new?
Mm.
Are you a good adopter?
Mm.
Right? Mm. If you're not, you can't do that. Right? Again, the third thing is, once having done both, are you mentally oriented to actually put in a lot of effort to build the first two?
Yeah.
And this decision, in my opinion, can be made in 5 minutes. And if you don't...
And to your framework, maybe first one is more intrinsic. Second one should be quite learnable, right?
Which one is? Which is the one around...
Adopting to a situation.
That is the one which is much tougher.
It is tougher, but if you don't have the ability to connect...
Yes.
You should just not attempt to push yourself in this area then.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So I'll tell you, I was listening to a podcast today morning.
Yeah.
And there was this podcast was about A.R. Rahman. Okay. A.R. Rahman, there were 5 people coming in and they were trying to praise A.R. Rahman as if he's the god of music, which he is. But they all said that he doesn't connect to people intrinsically, so he can't be a sales guy.
Yeah.
And when A.R. Rahman came in, the first thing that he said is that, I don't know why these guys are speaking so highly of me. I can't connect with them.
Yeah.
So he failed at the first level.
Yeah.
Right? And he had that intellectual honesty.
Yeah.
So in
my
opinion, if it's 1 + 3, do you have the bandwidth? And second, go through this.
Yeah.
Go through this.
I think one important meta lesson is, I do believe startups are hard. They are 90% of the
They are going to
90% of the time fail. Your job as an entrepreneur is to stack odds in your favor. It starts by being intellectually honest.
Right.
Start with intellectually honest, and then we'll come to your choice of co-founders, because then surround yourself with people who are like that. Going back to the choice of becoming an entrepreneur, other than rejecting me as a boss, what about... So, by the way, my other view is that sales is a very necessary skill as an entrepreneur. And so, the other takeaway potentially for people is, one, if you are not the salesperson, somebody in the founding team needs to be, right? Ideally, the main founder, but at least some co-founder, because you're always selling, right?
I'll give you one nugget I read sometime back. It said that an entrepreneur needs to be a great sales guy.
Yeah.
But every sales guy will not become an entrepreneur. That's important to realize.
Say more about the second.
If you're a great sales guy, and if you don't have some other inversely correlated skills, you'll never make it.
And say more about inversely correlated skills.
You will never be commercial. You can always downsell and sell a lot, right?
Mm.
Because you need to make money. Mm. Your cash needs to get realized. You need to make a profit out of that sale.
So that's what are your inversely? So I know you're a great salesperson and I know you're hyper commercial. Is that? And you're not a tech guy. which is why you said, "Meko tech work nahi karna."
Yeah.
But today you guys have a great tech business.
Yes. Because I outsource that skill.
Yeah.
I think the other key one is whether you want to work hard. What I've seen is that people who have a lot of flair tend to build...
Want to coast through life.
And they figured out a way that flair will actually, you know, take them out of every tough situation.
Yeah. But then they, when shit hits the fan, they won't last.
That's right. That's right.
You mentioned something else which I do want to pick up on. Why are you listening to a podcast about A.R. Rahman running a B2B manufacturing business? I know you have very varied interests. Say more about all your interests, including poetry.
Again, something that I would love to change now. At my peak, I used to have 20 hobbies. Writing poetry, reading about poetry, quizzing, watching movies. I still watch about 3 movies a week. Even now, right? Listening to music, playing an instrument, collecting stamps, collecting coins and stuff like that. I personally think that all of this is important because, frankly, it is a great stress buster. Because the work that we do, whether it is you or me, creates a lot of inherent stress.
Yeah.
And I'm paid for taking stress, right?
Absorbing it, yeah.
So, if you have inherent stress busters in your life, you can take a lot more stress in what you do.
It's very good. And also, I've noticed that it gives you the ability to speak on almost every topic.
Which
obviously then helps you. So, I think that's another actionable that, and especially in the context of sales, one of the things to think about is, what are my other interests and can I use them to connect with people?
Correct. Right? Correct.
So, let's go. You spoke about inversely correlated skills. We'll take one question, which is about choice of co-founders, whether people should have co-founders when they are starting out.
Hello, my name is Jasal and I'm one of the founders of Sandhu Club. My question is, as a CEO, how do you lead and work with your co-founders and your CXO team?
Speak about your wife is your, and there are husband-wife teams that have asked us questions. Your wife was at McKinsey. Let's talk a little bit more about her background. The choice of her as a co-founder, what kind of dynamics played out over a period of time. And you attracted a very, very strong founding team and CXOs. And I would say 5-6 years ago itself, I used to say you have the strongest team for the stage of the company. And obviously now that has become even stronger with the addition of a CFO. So talk about all of this, the thought process and the philosophy.
So for me, it was very simple. I knew I couldn't build everything. I knew I was good at a couple of things at best. Maybe I probably built one more. So maybe I'm good at 3 out of 10, right? So the 7 had to be outsourced.
Yeah.
Luckily, I found 2 at home. And I had to look for the other 5, right? I only looked through my network and found out people who were great in those 5. Tried selling them as much as possible. Luckily, some of them said yes. The core of what I'm trying to say is that in my case, since I had failed so much in trying to build skills which are inverted, I did not want to take that chance when I was starting up. To your point about making the odds in your
favor.
You
knew your strengths and you wanted people very clearly with certain strengths.
Absolutely right.
And went through a network to do that.
And also one simple point, I think, which worked well for us, again, came because we failed and learned from it, was that once you are hiring somebody with inversely correlated skill, there needs to be some level of deep-seated connect on one thing, wherein you actually feel that that guy is similar to me because he and I have one deep thing in common. If you have that, you will always inherently build respect, because otherwise, if it's yin and yang, you're always you don't have one level of connect. So you need to have at least one level of connect. There needs to be one common value that kind of binds you together. That's all we were looking for.
And could you share examples?
The one is hands-on.
Yeah.
I always like hands-on people. I don't like people who are who delegate, armchair. Yeah. No, that's a personal choice. I think it works well for other situations.
Yeah.
But in my case, hands-on is a very critical value that connects me to other people.
Interesting. So hands-on was very important to you. Clearly, I guess now that you say it, I don't see any real people with flair in your culture. And I think that again comes back to your view that somewhere, and you are being judgmental about it, but it's good that people with flair try to take too many shortcuts.
Yeah.
And you're not, I know you've built the opposite. From what I remember, you were known in McKinsey to sleep in the office.
Yeah.
And it probably still happens.
I still do, yeah.
How many years are we now into this? 10 years?
10th year.
10 years.
10th year.
And you were just telling me you're working 20-hour days. So
cut this out of the podcast, but yes.
Why? 20-hour days is great.
I wouldn't advise people to do so.
Why? All these young kids, they complain about 70-hour weeks. You're doing it in 3.5 days. You're doing it in half the week. That's what they need to learn. That's what it takes. There are no shortcuts. Anyway, coming back.
Yeah.
So, husband-wife team. Uh-huh. Many, in fact, lately we've been meeting more and more of those.
Yeah.
I am sure all kinds of discussions happen in, for them.
Yeah.
One, how do you keep it? What was the going in view? And I remember some of those discussions. How has that played out? And any advice to other husband-wife teams?
A going in discussion was very simple. I have always made a list of things that I'm looking for. I can tell you what I'm looking for right now as well. I think for the venture to succeed, I had made a list of 10 things. It was a square 10. I had 2 in the beginning. She had 3. So she made it into that list.
So what were those?
One was extremely high detail orientation. That was one. Second was a network into the financial world.
Yes.
Right. And she was well regarded there because of her academic and professional pursuits. I think the third thing was she could bind stuff together because I was a sales guy. So I was in the field. So somebody had to kind of,
Somato
there at the back end. Right. तो वो उसमें बहुत अच्छी थी और वो स्किल जो है वो बहुत ही रेयर है क्योंकि जिसके अंदर वो स्किल होता है उसमें अंदर और कुछ नहीं होता
बोला है उसको
on this stage. Thank you for bringing that out.
Okay.
The first one I always say, detail orientation.
Okay, good. So, and How has that played out? Any advice to other husband-wife teams on, you've obviously made it work. And by the way, credit to Ruchi. She was pregnant when you quit.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you guys started the business.
So our baby is about, I mean, our baby Kushi, then, yeah. Kushi,
yeah.
She is 6 days older than the incorporation of the business. So
wow, amazing.
Yeah, so.
So advice, how has that played out?
Advice is very simple. First of all, husband and wife is a partner and a partner.
Yeah.
Treat a wife, or the wife should treat the husband, as you treat a normal partner.
Yeah.
What do you do with a normal partner? You debate, you divide, and hopefully you conquer, right?
So don't assume that your personal relationship should be the same as your
partner. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Relationship should be actually different.
Yeah, actually. Actually, see what happens in a personal relationship is people try to take liberties.
Yes.
Right? They will kind of assume that stuff is probably known. They will probably jump the level of professional courtesy that you will extend to, you know, professional individuals and all that.
Yeah.
But the moment you believe that, you know, that is off, you will succeed. It's like two people succeeding.
But this is a very important point. I can see that you would potentially, the praise, for example, and appreciation you would give to other people in your organization, you may not do for your spouse.
Yeah, you may not. Because you'll assume.
You will say it at home.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. So. No, in fact, I'll give you an anecdote here. One of our lending partners, large banks, after having been in a lending relationship with us for about 3 years, they came and asked us in a joint meeting, and there were like seven of us, saying that, why is yours, meaning Ruchi's, address on Aadhaar? Because this came from the risk team. Why is the address on Aadhaar exactly the same as Ashish's?
Yeah, because Ruchi hasn't changed her last name.
Ruchi hasn't changed her last name.
Because and still on probation.
And it was not obvious that they were husband and wife, right? So I think that level of discipline is required. That's the only key to success.
Yeah.
And it just requires self-control. And the only way you can exercise self-control is if you have failed by not exercising it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I had seen husband and wife fighting with each other so much.
Yeah.
And I knew that the only reason they fight is because they assume that a lot of stuff is known.
Yeah. Very
good. A lot of stuff can be sorted out, right?
So to me, the takeaways are, right from the beginning, complementarity of skill sets, which also meant over a period of time, she's today running the financial services business. And so it's actually kind of evolved in that direction as well.
Right, right.
That keeps you potentially out of each other's, you know, whatever, turf, if you want to call it. Second, treat them professionally. Treat each other professionally.
Treat as you treat a normal human being, right? Don't assume that, you know, you can take liberties. Take liberties.
Yeah. Very good. Going back to the spirit of intellectual honesty.
Right.
You had mentioned, we joked about vulnerabilities. I know you love to share some of them. Also in the context of what we are trying to do here, with you know, making the entrepreneurial journey more human and more down to a level where people can relate to. What do you want to share? Both your vulnerabilities along the journey, and then maybe closing with some advice.
So, frankly, I had a lot of vulnerabilities to start off. I think the common one that I've seen as a thread as I look at most of the founders, I had an abundance, right? Which is that I had come up with an idea which was like really small. I was very passionate about it, but it just had no market. Or the market was very futuristic, right? It had no profit pool. And when I speak to wannabe founders, they are very passionate. Everybody is passionate about something.
Yes.
Right? Like at some stage in life, I was really passionate about collecting stamps.
Yeah.
We have some 70,000 stamps between me and Ruchi. Right? Yeah. She was also passionate about collecting stamps. But there's no market for stamps, right?
Yeah.
I think that's my first and biggest thing that you should look out for. And I did that by failing. My first idea was shot down by one of my closest friends, currently Z47, ex-Matrix. He did everything together with me, which was Vikram.
Yeah.
He laughed on me. And I think that's the only time he really laughed.
Yeah.
Because he's a very serious, intense kind of a guy. Right?
Yeah.
So I think the first thing that you have to really look out for is whatever you're thinking may be something that you're deeply passionate about, but that may not have a market. Bajari nahi hai, toh kya karoge?
Yeah.
Toh pehla wo ho gaya. I think the second thing is this thing about, you know, this notion of saying that we will find people.
Yeah.
Okay. I was very clear that I'm, as I told you, good in a couple of things, right? I had to look for the other 8 skills. I was lucky to find 3 at home, but I still had to look for 5.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody goes through that.
Yeah.
And then they kind of make that compromise into saying, okay, theek hai, mujhe mila nahi.
Yeah.
Toh main khud hi try kar leta hun. Wo hoga nahi. Right? I failed enormously in that. Mm. I remember for a particular specific tech skill, okay, I would have spoken to like 100.
I know.
Till I found it right next to my left hand, right?
Yeah.
So the other vulnerability is that people tend to give up a lot before starting up. I had
compromise
also
potentially.
Compromise.
Yeah.
They don't settle for it.
Very good. I want to unpack this, Ashish, because it goes into your company building philosophy. So talk more about, and it is potentially a takeaway for people, though I don't want them to be as brutal. You would not hire people at their last compensation. What is the logic for it? You would hire them only if they were taking significant pay cuts to join.
No, that was bravado. I have given that away.
You've given that away. Okay, so we'll talk about that. And I think one thing that people should take away from this is how many times Ashish has spoken about failing or being wrong. And I think that's also a superpower. But I also believe that you learned something about how homogenized talent pool and firms have worked. You were telling me how McKinsey, Goldman Sachs, ITC, talk about that and how that philosophy you applied at all business.
So one very simple thing that I know, when you start up something and you have some money, which you have raised likely, you can always pay and get talent from the market. I will tell you that doesn't work, particularly at the start. It doesn't work later as well, but it definitely doesn't work at the start because of a couple of reasons. If you pay for a certain skill, right? And it is not getting built out. Even if he contributes, it's revenue minus cost. The cost is high.
Mm.
And that cost will churn. Because if he's come to you for a hike, he will leave for a hike.
Yeah.
And that churn will really hurt you, right? So hence the only potential option is to hire young people.
Which is what the Goldmans and the McKinseys and the ITC, they have the management training program.
Absolutely. And it's purely because of commercial advantages. Mm. The churn is low, right? They cost very little.
Mm-hmm.
And if they work out, they can really contribute to revenue. So that's one.
And they can have a upward path. So therefore, longer gestation. Or
correct.
Longer longevity,
correct.
Rather.
Correct. Yeah. Agreed. The second thing is, if you hire from the industry, the other problem that you face, and I have faced it myself, and yeah. I used to really, really, be seethingly angry about it, which is, they'll come and tell their stories.
Mm.
They will come and tell you, if the guy is from, let's say, a large telecom company, like let's say Airtel, he will tell you stories about Airtel. We are not Airtel.
Yeah.
I'm off business, right?
By the way, I feel that at 347 also, I tell people, learn before you teach.
Right.
But a lot of times people just come and start wanting to teach without the context.
Without the context, right?
Yeah.
And hence what happens is, if there are like 10 hours in a day,
yeah,
or maybe 12 hours in a day,
yeah,
essentially they are talking about or thinking about their past for 4 hours in a day.
Yeah.
That's loss of time.
Very
that's
good.
Second. And the third thing that I see is that if you teach them something, they are always trying to balance it with their prior learnings.
Yeah.
So you have to hire fresh. There is no option.
Instead of going through all the unlearning.
Yes. Now, yeah. There are various models of hiring fresh. We adopted a model. I think I have seen other models work as well.
Yeah.
We said that we'll go straight to campuses and build our young talent pool. I can proudly tell you that out of our top 30 guys, 20 are from that freshman network.
Yeah.
And they lead significant businesses today.
Yeah.
But that's because also I failed. Frankly, if you ask me, I had worked with people in ITC. When I used to go to, let's say you are a guy, I wanted to get my job done, I'll go to you and you will tell me a lot about what you are doing.
Yeah.
And my job isn't taken as priority, right?
Yeah.
And then I used to always go and think that let me rather go and tell a laborer who's like two level down and he'll at least get my work done.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the kind of...
Super. Last question. It's about going public. I know you joke, Al Gore used to say, I was the next president of the US. I know you joke that I'm always the next IPO. What's the thought process? You could potentially keep attracting private capital also. How should founders who have scaled and, your company is rumored to be worth multiple billion dollars, how should they think about going public or not going public? How do you think about it and what's the plan?
At an early stage?
At what stage? Should you at all? I mean, there are people who say we'll stay private forever.
There are two types of companies which can actually afford to stay public for a really long time.
Afford to stay private?
My bad.
Yeah.
One is if you have a lot of old money sitting with you, inheritance, or you've jumped into a gold mine, those days are gone.
Yeah.
Right? This Coke Industries, for example, it's, I think it's still private.
KOCH.
KOCH.
Yeah. And one of the big influencers in the US elections also.
Yes. And very controversial as well. So you can be that. I think the options around that are very limited today. The other option is that you are a PSU and you have the taxpayer money funding you. You can't be either, right? The old money is gone. The new money is getting replaced with old money. I mean, the new money is the one which is ruling. So you have to go public. There's no option.
Yeah.
The question is, at what stage? What do you need to have to come to that stage? And how do you fast forward your journey?
Yeah.
Frankly, if you ask me, at what stage was very clear to me. What is needed to go public also was clear to me. I think the execution around that is where we were poor at. What we did not factor for, okay, we are a 10-year-old business. Ideally, we should have gone public a couple of years back. I'm being very honest. I think we will probably in the next 1 year for sure. I think what we didn't factor for is that there will always be a curveball that will be thrown at you.
Yeah.
And in spite of the curveball, you'll still have to keep going public.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you can actually make sure that you are creating value for your entire set of stakeholders in a continuous basis.
In a permanent basis. So basically, I mean, for the audience, stage of a business, high risk, each stage of a business corresponds to a certain capital structure that makes sense for it.
You know,
Adam Smith's classic forces, like land, labor, capital, so on. Capital is a very important input.
Yes.
And so venture capital, when you're starting, maybe even pre-seed, you know, angel money, then venture capital, then private equity, and then yes, you have to go public.
Right? Yes, but you need to keep your eye on going public at the very start of, actually, have you even thought about the venture?
Yes.
I will be very honest about it, that when I started off, the number of years that were being quoted was anywhere between 12 to 15. People used to say that, hey, if you're a good business, you can probably get there in 12 years. From the time you thought about the business, not from the time you started.
Yeah.
I think that time has shrunk.
It has shrunk a lot. And but I think this is a very important point. It's again come up a couple of times, so I'm going to summarize again. You said one of the pitfalls to watch out for is how deep is your market? How deep are the profit pools? But you're also saying one of the things to write in the upfront think about is, what can this company go public? What is going to be the architecture? And I remember our debates, or rather discussions, where you were telling me that we didn't do, and I agree with that, we didn't do a good enough job of knowing public market backwards. ROCE matters. You know, things like that. The narrative from, and when we go and meet the public market investors, they actually speak a very different language than we do.
Yeah.
But it's good to know that way early. Superb. Ashish, wonderful. Any advice, inputs, comments for the people who look up to you, are inspired by you, are thinking about entrepreneurship, or maybe are entrepreneurs and maybe in that early struggling phase? What inputs, any advice you have?
I'll make it contextually. When I came in into the room right next door, you had this screen which actually, you know, founders first. So you had this screen which used to have all the founder names and a tag beneath it. My tag in that screen was builder, right? I think what I'm good at is building what I'm good at. I outsource a lot and I don't try to build in everything. So that's what I will advise. Be yourself. Everybody has a superpower. Build, keep building in that superpower. Everything else, let the others do.
Superb. Privileged to be your partner in this new journey. May you not be the next upcoming IPO and be the real IPO now. Congratulations on all the progress and good luck on the journey ahead.
Thank you for the kind words. I must say that Avnish took 17 years of my knowing him. 17 years of my knowing him to actually succinctly put it in this way. So thank you for the kind words.
Superb. Thanks. You, Ashish.
You're watching Z47 Moments, the podcast by India's oldest venture capital firm, Z47. If you like this episode, consider hitting the subscribe button and the bell icon so you never miss an update from Z47 Moments.